morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This is the program where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening and what it will mean to you and to your family. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, by way of His covenant. If you are rational, I promise this will be the best part of today's program. Our number, should you want to engage in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. Day before yesterday, there was a prelude to the Republican National Convention acceptance speech by Mr. Romney that was an indication of the attitude of his opponent that I'd like to share with you. In the little town of Charlottesville, Virginia, Obama wanted to give a campaign speech. He wanted it to be at the University of Virginia because he wanted to appear academic. And he told the university the specific venues that would be acceptable to him that looked suitably academic. It was all about perceptions, you know. But they said, no, we can't have you here because you want us, a state institution, to pick up the cost of all of the security, which is in the millions of dollars. And if we do it for you, we'll have to do it for the others, and we can't afford that burden. You want to pick up the cost? You want to appear academic? Then that would be fine. He said no to that. He did not want to pick up the costs, even though it was not his money. But he still decided he would come to Charlottesville because it is known as the home of Thomas Jefferson. He wanted to appear as if he were like Thomas Jefferson. They bear nothing in common. He wanted to appear that he was academic. It's the home of the University of Virginia. For those that don't know, Charlottesville, Virginia is about an hour and a half drive from Washington, D.C. Mr. Obama did not drive. Now, you might say, oh, he's a busy man. He's president of the United States. He can't take an hour and a half each way out of his schedule to drive. I remind you, this was not a speech. This was not a meeting that had anything to do with being the president of the United States. He was taking all of his time out of his schedule to raise money, to run for re-election. That ought to be on his time. It's an hour and a half drive. Would have cost the U.S. taxpayers a few hundred bucks. You could take Marine One from the lawn of the White House to the grounds of the University of Virginia or anywhere else in Charlottesville that you wanted and be there in about 30 minutes. He didn't take Marine One. No. This hypocrite got aboard Air Force One to go from Washington, D.C. to Charlottesville, Virginia. Why? So that when the news cameras and news journalists showed pictures of him disembarking from the airplane, he would look presidential. Now, why did I call him a hypocrite? This is the same man that when the auto companies flew much smaller, much more efficient jets from Detroit, a much greater distance away, into Washington to meet with him, all of his rhetoric was over, see, they've lost sight of reality. Look at them flying these expensive jet airplanes here. Why not drive from Detroit to Washington? And yet this hypocrite, he boards Air Force One just so that he looks good. That's the kind of man we have in the White House. This is the very kind of man that would send another surge of American soldiers into Afghanistan after it was obvious to everyone with half a brain that the war had been lost, only to lose another 1,000 American lives, all so that he would look good, so he would look like he was in command of the military. That's the kind of man we have in Washington, D.C. And more than half of Americans favor him. That's the kind of country we've become. Now let's turn the page to the man that asked us to turn the page, who said it was time to turn the page. And what we have here is a man who says, I believe in America. That's exactly the opposite of what you should be hearing. It is time to turn the page. But we ought to turn the page to something that the vast preponderance of Americans haven't read in a very long time, if ever. The Torah. If you're going to trust something, it is the only thing worthy of your trust. Your country most certainly isn't. Mr. Romney most certainly is not. His mantra was, we believe in America. Yahweh's mantra is, walk away from your country. Trust and rely on me instead. That's the opposite, really. So if you're a Christian, as so many Republicans are, and you're swooning over your presidential candidate, if you are patriotic, as so many Christians are, swooning over your country, you need to know that what you're doing is directly opposed to God's instructions. Don't sing God Bless America. You're a hypocrite, too. He, in his speech, said the same thing that Obama said in his speech. What we're going to do here is we're going to create energy independence. We're going to cut the deficit, and we're going to create jobs. That was the exact same speech that Obama gave 4 years ago. He didn't do any of those things. In fact, he exacerbated all of them. A week ago, it was announced that our dependence on Saudi Arabian oil has never been greater. Our deficit has never been larger. It's now $16 trillion. And during this president's administration, we lost millions of jobs. Now, why would I judge this candidate based upon the failed performance of the previous candidate? Because the New York Times, the nation's leading newspaper, said in its headlines, as it reported on his speech, Mr. Romney still has to convince Americans that Obama's presidency didn't work. Imagine being so deceived that political hacks that work as so-called journalists for the New York Times have to be convinced that Obama's presidency didn't work. Everything he promised, he did the opposite. In every possible way, he failed. It does not matter what your objective criterion is for this last administration. It was a disaster. And yet, the New York Times says, oh, you know, we don't think that Obama did such a bad job. He deserves more time. Here is the reality as it relates to energy independence, the kind of moves America would have to make, which is the kind of moves that Obama promised that didn't deliver, are so radically different from what we're doing. Yes, Scott.
I was going to say that just because something didn't fail doesn't mean it worked. I mean, there's a pretty big difference there. I mean, like, what do they think went right during the Obama administration?
Well, everything possible failed. We became more dependent on foreign oil. They're more vulnerable as a country. We lost more and more troops overseas in needless wars. The Islamic Reformation took over the world of Islam like a flame, a firestorm, making America infinitely less secure. And this president contributed mightily to it with his speeches about the beauty and wonder and contribution of Islam. Everything that he spoke of, like, for example, change. And he brings in more retreads from prior administrations than any president in history. We continue to lose millions of jobs. He does everything that he could possibly do to stall economic recovery. it is astonishing that most Americans still favor him. Our deficit is beyond resolution. It is now $16 trillion. This presidency added about $1.5 trillion to that deficit each of its past 3 years. To cut the deficit, just to put this in perspective, because I want to have people appreciate the imaginary world of politics that so many people gravitate to. If we're actually going to cut the deficit, if we're going to take it from $16 trillion in aggregate and stop adding to it and reverse that trend and start reducing it so we get it to a number that somehow could be considered reasonable at like $5 trillion, we would have to cut America's defense budget by over 70%, Medicare by over 70%, Social Security by over 70%, and every other aspect of government by 70%. But this president and his vice president candidate are telling America they're not going to cut Medicare and Social Security. They have spoken nothing about cutting defense. It is smoke and mirrors, folks, when you don't realize how radically those programs have to be cut for us to deal with the defense, with the deficit. Talked about creating jobs. Government doesn't create jobs, it kills jobs, particularly in the private industry. There's this mantra in America now that corporations are bad. And yet it is business that pays 100% of the bills. And yet the American government is the biggest foe of American businesses. The only thing you could do to create jobs is to radically reduce taxation, particularly corporate taxation. Cut even further capital gains taxation. And to radically reduce regulations on business. But if you do that, then what happens to your deficit unless you're willing to cut the size of government programs? And so, once again, the government is what has to be cut, and radically, so that we can reduce taxation and regulation. No one is talking about how that is achieved, because they don't know how it's achieved. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break. I am Yatta, your host.
Jim Newcomb.
Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yatta, 877-300-7645. You know, Americans all know that there's something dreadfully wrong with their country. That's the reason why every political candidate runs on the concept of change. As Obama said, let's turn the page. Change, change, change. Change we can believe in. And yet nothing ever changes. Doesn't matter if the Republican wins or the Democrat wins, nothing ever changes. They run on a singular mantra. Change. Both sides. What does that tell you? That there is no real choice. Speaking of choices, Romney tried to take a negative and turn it into a positive, and therefore he ignored Mormon doctrine and talked about one of the, in fact, probably the only favorable symptom and selling point of Mormonism. If he had spoken of Mormon doctrine, he would have looked like an utter fool, because Mormonism, next to Islam, are the two easiest religions in the world to prove wrong, unreliable, untrustworthy, false. So he didn't speak of Mormon doctrine, but he took lots of time to speak about Mormonism and what it, in what the one thing that it does that has benefit, and that is it has an emphasis on family. And that sounds all nice that all the families stay together and they play together and they go to their little churches together until you realize that parents are poisoning their own children. They're corrupting them. Parents are raising their children to be Mormons, when, in fact, every Mormon who has ever been corrupted by that religion no longer exists. They are precluded from heaven. It is a false religion. Mormonism, and just like Christianity and Islam, were all conceived in the exact same way, as was, by the way, Rabbinical Judaism, which is the only strain of the religion practiced today. All four religions conceived exactly the same way, which is why it is so easy to disprove all four religions. All four claim, well, they had a newer, better, fresher revelation, a new idea that their God inspired that it contradicts everything their God said. Whether it be the Talmud, or the Christian New Testament, or the Quran, or the Book of Mormon, the claim is that there is a new revelation from the same old God, and yet the new revelation corrupts the old God's testimony in every conceivable way. Now, you don't have to be the sharpest tool in the shed to figure out, wait a minute, if the old God's testimony is no longer valid, if there has to be an entirely new approach, how is it that that God's new approach is now trustworthy when his old approach wasn't? How can a new religion be true if it's based upon the mantra of a God who says it's false? But instead, no, he didn't want to speak of that. And of course, the easiest way to prove Mormonism false is that its primary claim is that the native populations in the Americas, North, Central, and South, were Jews who had hopped on a mighty ship during the time of Solomon and sailed to America, and they became the Native American peoples. Of course, once we came up with the DNA, it was easy to prove that the foundational claim of Mormonism was false. And once Mormonism was proven to be false, because religious people aren't rational, it didn't dissuade anyone. And that's the problem with this man occupying the White House. He's not rational. He's a Mormon. He can't be rational. His running mate is no better. The most corruptive force on planet Earth for most of the last 2,000 years is the Roman Catholic Church. There's 1,500 years where it was the most negative influence on planet Earth. It is extraordinarily easy to recognize that Roman Catholicism is false. Yeah, its Protestant counterpart incorporates 80% of the corruptions of Roman Catholicism, but it's considerably more clever in the way that it deceives. Roman Catholicism is not clever at all. It is almost exclusively Babylonian. And so you have a man utterly confused by Babylon as the running mate, and the other by Mormonism. Neither man is qualified. Neither man is rational enough to be president of the United States. You ought not vote for them. And you've never had a more hypocritical president, America, than Barack Hussein Obama. And maybe never even a worse one. You ought not vote for him either. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths, 877-300-7645. We'll be back with you after the break. Shattering Myths, I am your host, Yada. You're welcome to join us in this conversation, 877-300-7645. I was debating whether or not to go and turn to the real world and deal with Iran and its nuclear ambitions, or speak just a moment longer about the stupidity of religion. Just look at the nature, particularly, of Mormonism. And it's the same, by the way, with Islam. It's the same with Christianity. It's the same with Rabbinical Judaism. All three recognized they were offering nothing as evidence or proof that they were trustworthy. Nothing. Not a miracle, not nothing. And so what did they all do? All four of those concepts, they decided, you know what we can do here? Is what we can do here is to, we're going to usurp the credibility of Yahweh. We won't call him by name, but we'll say that our God is the same God that proved himself in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and that we are just the subsequent message of that God, because that God, he proved himself. His testimony is grounded in history. Every intimate detail, and there are thousands of them that Yahweh provides about his dealings with Adam and with Noah and with Abraham and then with Moshe. All the intimate details of what and when and where are verifiable. He has tens of thousands of exacting prophecies, all that have come true exactly as he said. His testimony doesn't have a contradiction in it. And it's brilliant. He proved beyond any doubt that he is who he said he is and that he is dependable and trustworthy. And yet every one of these religions, because they know that they don't have a thing going for them, they don't have a single prophecy, not one. Muhammad's main prophecy was that the day of doom would come 500 years after his death. Now, that was well over 1,000 years ago. It didn't happen, did it? Paul's great prophecy was that the rapture, his harpazo, snatching away, would come during his lifetime. Didn't happen, did it? Joseph Smith, what a fool. Here's a con man. And you believe in the 19th century that this con man is going to come up with a new revelation that contradicts God's testimony, and yet it's still based on the same testimony of that same God, and every statement he made turned out to be untrue. Come on, folks. You've got a God who proved himself. The only real God. His testimony is exacting. Every historical statement has been shown to be true. Every prophecy has materialized. And yet these come wannabe leaders. These, I'm going to create a new religion. The Pauls, the Muhammads, the Joseph Smiths, the Rabbi Akivas. They all usurp his credibility and they tell an entirely different story. One in completely contradictory with what he said. It is pathetic. In a rational world, it would not have lasted a nanosecond. So what does it say about our world that most people are beguiled by one of these religions? Now, meanwhile, in the real world, Reuters reports that Iran has doubled the number of uranium enrichment centrifuges it has in an underground bunker. A UN report said on Thursday, showing Tehran has continued to expand its nuclear program despite Western pressure and the threat of an Israeli attack. There is no greater threat to the world today than the Iranian possession of nuclear weapons. Yahweh spoke at great length about the rise of Iran, the unification of Iran and Iraq, and the war that they're going to perpetrate on the world. And they speak today of exactly the same thing, of the rise of their Mahdi, who is God, the unification of the Caliphate, and an all-Islamic attack on Israel. And they're building the weaponry to do so. Oh, well, they're building that part that America isn't selling them. America is selling those who would destroy Israel 24 times more weaponry than it is providing Israel. And yet this president has used diplomatic tools to dissuade the Iranians. And yet, in the face of those diplomatic efforts, the Iranians are simply scoffing at the rest of the world, and they have redoubled again their ability to enrich uranium. And in the journalistic world, typically in every article you read, but the Iranians say that their enrichment is for peaceful purposes. Oh, sure, then why put all of their program under a mountain? Why take the one building that was responsible for showing that they could control the centrifugal explosions that are used to make a bomb and raise it, destroy it, so the evidence is no longer inspectable? Why take uranium, enrich it beyond 3-4% fissile purity when 3-4% is perfect for a nuclear reactor, and anything beyond that is counterproductive? Why take it to 20-50%? To 90, as they're doing. Their goal is to have a nuclear bomb so that they can be the most powerful of all Islamic nations and control the world of Islam so that they can fulfill their agenda, which is the destruction of Israel and the conquest of the world, so that everyone submits to their demonic god. As Israeli politicians increased their talk of airstrikes on Iran's nuclear sites in recent months, the Islamic Republic was rapidly increasing the enrichment capacity of its four-door site buried deep underground to withstand any such hit. By the way, that site would have been rendered completely inept had it not been for the Germans. The Germans are the ones that resolved the bug that was caused those centrifuges to destroy themselves. Siemens, the very company that was hugely involved in the Holocaust, once again engaged. Symantec, the antivirus company, also German in origin, engaged. Next time you think about buying German, think again. The UN International Atomic Energy Agency also said in its quarterly report on Iran that the buildings had been demolished and the earth had been removed. At the military sites the IAEA wants to inspect, in what Western diplomats see as a determined effort by Tehran to clean up its evidence of illicit nuclear-linked tests. Let me reemphasize the point I made earlier, which this journalist didn't want to acknowledge either because this journalist was too ignorant or didn't want to admit that they had also been deceived. The buildings that were destroyed were the buildings where the Iranians had tested their ability to create the centrifugal explosions that start a fission bomb. And that they had taken highly enriched uranium there, and they had proven that they had the capacity to create those centrifugal explosions. They raised the site that carried away all of the soil so that the evidence is no longer verifiable. Now, if they weren't doing what the world knows they were doing there, why would they do that? These extensive activities at the Parchin complex, the Vienna-based UN agency added, would significantly hamper its investigation there. Yeah, make it impossible. And if the inspectors are allowed access, which they have not. The building, which the IAEA believes is housing a steel chamber for explosive tests, has now been shrouded in a possible attempt to hide it from satellite cameras. Oh, do you think that's the reason? Oh, come on. They're just making, enriching uranium to power a electric plant. You know, when they first came out with that rouge, I told everyone who would listen that Iran, not only because of the Caspian Sea, but because of their own reserves, simply dissipates natural gas into the atmosphere or burns it. Because they have this, so much of it. Don't even know what to do with it. And yet the most efficient way to boil water, to create electricity through steam turbines, is through natural gas. There is no way any country with a surplus of natural gas would build a nuclear power plant under any circumstances. And so the whole thing was a fraud. Muslims lie, it's what they do. And another apparent sign of stonewalling the IAEA's inquiry, it said no concrete results have been achieved in a series of high-level, high-profile meetings with Iran this year aimed at allaying concern about its nuclear research. Quote, Iran's continued enrichment activities serve to taunt all of those in the international community concerned by Iran's nuclear program, a Western diplomatic source said. Just the notion that the West is trying to negotiate with Iran over this shows that those in the West who we are allegedly trusting to keep Iran from having nuclear weapons and deploying them in the West are clueless as to the nature of Islam. Even if you had a guarantee, an absolute ironclad promise from Iran that it would stop enriching uranium, that it would stop all tests and all programs for a nuclear bomb, it would be worthless because of the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. I can guarantee you that the mullahs in Tehran know all about the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. And they would sign their name to anything, recognizing that their pledge, according to their God, was not binding on them. Read the Ninth Surah, negotiators, diplomats in the West. It's the same thing with Israel, negotiating with the so-called Palestinians, that mythical people, on a land for peace treaty. The Muslims who signed it would not view it as binding on them because their God told them so. This report corroborates what Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been saying for years now, an Israeli official said, referring to his view that the diplomatic process has only given Iran more time to pursue its program. But ever in the imaginary world of hypocritical words and symbolism, Washington, the Obama administration, says there's still time for diplomatic pressure to work. It could be drawn into any Israeli-Iran conflict. Our nation's leaders are either ignorant beyond belief or immoral beyond comprehension. And we are the consequence if Iranian nuclear program is not thwarted, and thwarted immediately. And all America has ever done is to encourage it. Millions upon millions, even billions, will die. That is what the fate of the world is because of this utter foolishness. I am your host, Yada. This program is Shattering Myths, and we're going to complete the news hour of our program. I asked Scott during the break three questions that I thought were germane to the conversation that we've been having this morning. The first of those questions was, which country in the world gave the Iranians, you've got 220, 230 countries in the world. Which of those 220 or 30 countries in the world gave the Iranians the uranium that they are now enriching and turning into nuclear weapons? Who was that country, Scott?
That was us.
Yeah, the United States.
United States, yeah.
Okay. Question number two was, which country gave the Iranians the built the nuclear reactor for the Iranians that could be used as this veil to hide the fact that they're enriching uranium for a bomb as opposed to peaceful electric purposes? Who gave them and built that plant for them?
That was us again. Yeah.
Two for two. Okay. All right. So we're not doing so good here. Let's see if we don't strike out on this next one. Which country enabled the Iranians to pursue their nuclear ambitions because it subdued Iran's only foe, whom they were constantly involved in war with, and gave that foe to them?
That was us again with Iraq.
Yeah, we invaded Iraq, didn't we? We eliminated Iran's only foe. We gave Iraq to the Iranians so that now they have the ability to complete their nuclear ambitions. We strike out, did we not? Let me take that one step further. Iran's going to complete their nuclear ambitions. They're going to have a bomb. This planet rotates such that the prevailing winds in the world go from west to east. That's the way the jet stream goes, and that's because of the nature of the rotation of our planet. Which direction from Iran is Israel? Is it west or east of Iran, and is it close or very far away from Iran? Last time I checked,
it was
a little slow on the uptake there,
yeah,
Scott.
I'm sorry. It's east, and it's really close.
Yeah, Iran is east of Israel, and yeah, it is really really close. So if Iran deployed a sizable number of nuclear weapons to wipe out Israel, where would all of the radioactive fallout fall out?
Right back into Iran.
Oh, there you go. Probably not the world's best idea. Now, does Israel have nuclear weapons?
This I'm not actually sure on.
No, the answer is yes, they do.
Okay.
Do they admit it? Of course not. Does the world know it? Yes. Now, what happens when you you try to destroy a nation with nuclear weapons, what do they do with their nuclear weapons?
They usually shoot them off.
There we go. Where would they shoot them off in this case?
Right at Iran.
Okay, so unless you wanted to be a martyr and verify whether or not Allah was telling you the truth, that there are multiple virgins awaiting those who kill Jews, there would not be much incentive for the Iranians to nuke Israel, would there?
I am not a military strategist, nor am I a politician, so I'm going to say no. That doesn't make a lot of sense there.
No. Yahweh has been very accurate thus far in his predictions. He tells us precisely what's going to happen. I wish Israel's politicians, their country would be aware of it. There is a 0% chance that Israel is going to be the victim of Iranian nuclear weapons. They shouldn't be the ones that have to stop them. Those nuclear weapons will not be used in Israel. But God has told us where they are going to be used. They're going to start a war by detonating them in some of America's largest cities, because America did what Neville Chamberlain did, forced Israel to give up the high ground, narrowing Israel at the waist is what the prophecies foretell. And it will be America's cities that will be destroyed by those bombs, and we will have brought this terror on ourselves, according to God. And that ultimately, that act and others perpetrated by Muslims against Israel, igniting the world in war, engaging the Russians and the Chinese in this process because of their economic ties to Iran, is going to lead to a nuclear holocaust. And half of the world is going to die. That is the consequence of what we're talking about here. So there is indeed a lot at stake. And yet the nation that has the least of all at risk is Israel, because Yahweh has told us precisely what he's going to do there. It is a conventional war that the Muslims are going to launch against Israel. It's going to be launched in 2027. It is only conventional, and Yahweh himself is going to intervene. It's been a long time since he's intervened and changed the culmination of human free will. He is a free will advocate, but he will only allow free will to the point of not allowing it to destroy Israel, not allowing it to destroy this planet and all life on it. God's going